Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham, Fleck, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. I am your host, Skipjack, and we are here to talk about your title-contending Tottenham Hotspur. I guess that doesn't quite work if you can't make it plural. Anyway, I am joined by two out of our regular four panelists. Michael Cayley couldn't make it tonight. Presumably, there's a marathon of Square One on somewhere else. I think that's the second week in a row I made a Square One joke about Michael. That's not good. First up, we have the veteran of the podcast, a man who can truly appreciate the vintage of this Tottenham Hotspur win, Brian. Brian, how hype are you for Tottenham Hotspur this week?
We're winning the fucking league.
We're winning the fucking league. As the great Eric Lamella once said, we're winning the fucking league. How like in the grand scheme of Tottenham performance you've seen as in your time as a Spurs fan, which stretches back to the early days of Robbie Keane, how's that rank?
Yeah, it's up there. I think it will gain more as the season goes on, and we can look back on this game like in retrospect. But like for now, it feels big, just because it's the first loss for Pep, but I don't think we're going to truly appreciate the greatness of this victory until we can look at the season as a whole.
Well, we're going to hear more about how this game is going to affect the season as a whole from my sidekick, the Robin to my Batman, the Sonny to my Cher, Ben Daniels. Ben, welcome back. You had a week off and you came back just in time for the most exciting performance of the year from any team in England. How'd it make you feel?
Is Sonny Cher sidekick, or is that the other way around?
Pretty sure Sonny is Cher sidekick.
And I think you guys really missed the opportunity
way to perpetuate
Sonny and Kevin Vimmer.
way to perpetuate the patriarchy, by the way, Ben. That's good work there.
Yeah, sorry, but yeah, the Vimmer to your Sonny, I think, as Brian said, is the better Sonny bit
with your tuxedo and jorts.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, in 10 years, I would say this might be the best Tottenham performance I have ever seen.
I think Inter at home is the only thing I can think of that comes close.
Even Inter away, though, that game was so much fun.
Well, Inter away was like a great 10 minutes and a really, really bleak 80 minutes. So,
yeah, I haven't seen a game against Arsenal where we played this well throughout. Like, I mean, this was just... You know, like I can't think of a complete game that this was this good that I've seen as a Spurs.
Our first half, the first time we beat Man United with that Dempsey goal and that Vertonghen goal.
We were on the back foot a lot in that game.
But the second half of that game was, it was just us playing defense like crazy people. I think this might be the best game I've ever seen us play. I hated it. I hated every minute of it while I was watching it. I don't think I have ever been so nervous and so terrified to be winning a game.
You're just waiting for the sucker punch?
It just felt like Sergio Aguero is going to do some dumb shit, and like Jesus Navas, who never does anything against anybody but seems to score against Spurs, like something dumb was going to happen and make it terrifying.
One of City's refugees from the island of misfit toys always does seem to fuck up. Like, remember that year Nasri scored that goal? We ended up winning that game, but like, Nasri scored on us, and I remember watching that game being like, Nasri's still on Man City? What the fuck? Yeah, they always seem to fuck us. I don't know about you, but I think... Well, I do know about you because you just said it, but the moment I got really scared was when Lamella missed the penalty kick. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, oh, for sure. That was like the moment of, this game is over, we won, holy shit, we just beat Man City 3-0, and then the penalty kick happened, and I was like, oh, well, Aguero's certainly going to score in the next 5 minutes. And then I'm going to be shitting myself until this whistle blows. It was horrifying. It was, I think, the only game I've been this nervous for was maybe the Man City game that was like the Champions League playoff in 2009-2010, where we just battered the hell out of them and somehow could not score until finally Peter Crouch, headed in the winner. That is like the level of nerves I was operating under, with
before
way lower
the game
stakes.
Or only once we took a 2-0 lead
throughout the game.
No, but I mean, was this how you approached the game, or is it after we started playing well, you were bracing yourself for a disappointment?
I braced myself for a disappointment
before
and
it started.
Super, no, before it started, I was like, we're going to win this. Then once the game happened,
you're very consistent, Ben. Has anyone ever told you that?
Yeah. I mean, it was so exciting, and it's like, you don't want the game that your team is playing to be exciting. You want the game to be a drab, comfortable 4-0 win that, you know, nothing interesting ever happened. It's just routine as fuck.
Yeah, you don't want to be open on both ends and back and forth.
You want a game that neutrals
one-way traffic.
Right. That was a game that, like, everybody watching was like, damn, this shit is lit. And I don't want that.
That's about as like comfortable. That's about as comfortable as a back and forth game between City and Spurs could have possibly been. Like,
it's weird because it was back and forth and open, and everybody had their chances. And at the same time, it was completely dominant from Spurs.
Yeah, I never felt like we were out of control of this match. Even towards the end, like the only reason it felt threatening at the end is because we weren't completely eating City's lunch at the end of the game. Like, we were still, like, Gundogan, I thought, gave us some problems, and we'll talk more about this in a minute. But I never felt like we were really out of control of that match. It was just, like, the only thing I thought was, like, ah, yeah, because they have Aguero, they're maybe getting better shots off than another team would, but they're still not.
Yeah, that was it. It was like, you're never going to shut out a team as good as Man City completely. Like, they're going to take shots.
We did shut them out, but you mean, like, shut them out of the game as opposed to...
Right. Like, a team as good as City is always going to get chances. They're always going to be in the game. Like, no matter how bad you beat the shit out of them, you can't... You know, there's just always that one moment where something special happens and Sergio Aguero's phenomenal and he scores. And I couldn't get that out of my head the whole game. But at the same time, you know, I definitely appreciated the fact that, like, holy shit, this team looked like an unstoppable juggernaut who is going to walk the league, and we are handling them.
Without our starting striker, without our starting midfield.
Yeah.
It's insane. I did not expect, like, I think noted Spurs fan Mike Goodman said this on Twitter, like, the last 20 minutes is sort of what he thought when we were, like, sort of downshifted a little bit and City was getting more of the ball and we weren't really attacking them all that much, but they weren't looking super dangerous. Like, he thought, like, okay, that's the best case scenario for Spurs, like, which is probably, maybe I would have been more generous than that, but I didn't think we'd just run City off the pitch, which is exactly what happened. I mean,
from kickoff, I mean, we are all up in them. I mean, like, some was taking snapshots from, like,
they were
inside the first
Bravo.
Couple of minutes. And
Man
like,
City's keeper, who's a Barcelona, like, product or whatever, like, I've never seen any keeper in any game I've ever watched under that much consistent pressure in terms of, like, people trying to take the ball off of him. I honestly
I thought there was a moment where he was just going to throw the ball into his own net out of fear of our press. Like, he was just like, stop it. Here's the goal. Leave me alone.
I mean, it was maybe the most effective I've seen Pochettino's press ever. And it wasn't our best 11. You were even close to our best 11. I mean,
That raises questions of might it be, but
All right, Ben.
Well, so what I wanted to talk about was, and I don't know if I'm spoiling questions down the road or anything, but like, is you know, we were all sitting in like the writers' room when the lineups kind of dropped, and we were just like, well, what is this? Like, what are we doing?
Like a rotated Champions League lineup.
It's just like, how are we going to hold on to possession if we don't have Jansen? Why are we playing Sissoko there and not playing Son there? Why are we putting Ali in the midfield and not rolling with, you know, Dyer if he's healthy? Or I think there were a couple people, probably Ben included, that said, why aren't we playing a Harry Winks in the midfield? I would much rather see Wanyama Winks.
But that's just Ben's like natural state of being, like. Like fish
yeah,
guys
ben,
swim,
Ben really does like Harry Winks.
Yeah.
So all right, let me
no,
defend
no,
myself.
Ben, that, I'm just making a joke at your expense. You don't have to defend.
No, but you're not wrong. So let me defend myself. I mean, you know, when the lineup rolled out, it looked like it was going to be a Dele Alli Wanyama pivot in a 4-2-3-1, which we've seen before, and it did not go well.
You're about to keep fucking that chicken, aren't you?
I mean, we played it against Monaco.
You're about to talk about Eriksen as deep lying midfielder, aren't you?
I'm absolutely going to talk about that.
So you're definitely about to fuck that.
I mean,
chicken.
That's the story of the game. So if you don't talk about that, you're not talking about the game.
Yeah, but you're not going to talk about it. You're going to just say, I told you so.
I did. I did tell everybody so. no, but like we had seen the Dele Alli Wanyama midfield struggle against a team like Monaco, who are clearly not the same league as Man City.
Did they struggle against Monaco, or was it just not as effective as we would have liked? Like,
all right, so
I think struggle. I think struggle is the right word.
I'm not sure that's how I would characterize. Okay, I'm nitpicking. Look, continue, Ben.
I mean, like their goals were shitty, and like it wasn't like a product of bad play.
It's not the kind of lineup you would think that could handle Pep City, is what you're trying to say.
Right. Like, you know, we know what Dele Alli is good at, and it's not controlling a midfield. What Dele Alli is good at is making those runs, getting into dangerous spaces, scoring goals, you know, making a nuisance of himself in the press, you know, and
what he ended up doing.
We got what he ended up doing. Exactly what he ended up doing is exactly like peak Dele Alli. But he wasn't playing central midfield, which is what it looked like to begin with. What we got instead was Christian Eriksen playing as a deep-lying midfielder for the second time in his Spurs career. The first time last season, he looked really good. And I know I was very excited for that and wanted to see it more. But
you also think Nabil Bentaleb's a left back, so I mean,
and his performances at Schalke might prove that I'm
right. Certainly seem to indicate he's not a central midfielder.
I mean, that poor guy.
But anyway, so going back to my point is I came into this game and I was like, oh, we're gonna get fucking rocked, because you know Son is a striker, a lone striker, just didn't seem to make sense, and all the things that Ben said about Dele Alli were, you know, exactly how I felt. And then I was cautiously optimistic about Sissoko, but you know, we haven't really seen him be like
good,
super amazing, good, whatever adjective you want to use.
Well, we can talk about Sissoko in a minute, because I thought he was way better than any of us thought he would be against Pep City.
But it seemed to be the exact right lineup, and it was like, you know, Pochettino might actually know what he's doing sometimes, I guess, apparently.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, in hindsight, I can't imagine how he would have lined up better with the personnel available to us.
What I think is most incredible about this lineup is, if you watch, like, I know people are going to poo-poo because it's Match of the Day, but Jermaine Genius was talking about the press on Match of the Day. One of the things I thought was interesting, which I guess we all sort of knew, but it was interesting to hear it articulated by a player, is like the thing that makes the press work isn't that you have a bunch of guys who are physical and can run and know what to do with other individual players on the other team. What makes the press work is that everybody has an awareness of what everyone else is doing. And when, say, like Son starts pressing, Dele Alli, Sissoko, and Danny Rose all know what they're supposed to do. You know,
well, it's just like, but there's that gif going around the internet this week from the Manchester United game, where Zlatan goes to close down the central defender with the ball, and he points at Rooney to indicate to Rooney to close down the defensive midfielder, and Rooney doesn't, and then the central defender is able to relieve the pressure on him by simply just passing to the wide-open central midfielder. That's exactly why the press works, is because, like you said, we all work in Congress with one another.
And that was what was so impressive about this game, is like, this is not a lineup that has played together before, certainly not in the roles they were playing together. And these guys don't, like, this was a very makeshift, like, sort of Spurs that went out there because of the injuries that we had. And they looked, I mean, you know, if you just hadn't watched any English football for the last 5 years, you might think that was Spurs' starting lineup, or that these guys had played a whole season together in those formations. It was really, really good, the way everyone was just on the same wavelength. It was so much fun to watch.
I mean, I'm really not convinced by Son as a central striker, but
it
he was the exact thing that we needed in that game, just because, you know, if John Stones and Nicolas Otamendi are going to not be positionally sound and are going to drift around and try to break the lines by dribbling, then a player like Son is going to make
the thing that Pochettino did correctly. It's like they do that, and that is a known factor of how Pep City operates, is that, you know, they break out one of their center backs into midfield all the time. Like, you know, Otamendi and Stones look good under Pep in a way they never did under Pellegrini, because they're doing different things. Because, you know, they have both have the ability to carry the ball, distribute the ball, move the ball into midfield, and contribute to the attack. And when that's a function of your defense, you know, you create a really good one-on-one situation for your striker, who, if he's fast and hanging off their shoulder like Sun did all game, you know, he was offsides 1,000 times, but every time he was onside, it created a dangerous attack for us, and it was the perfect opportunity.
Yeah, but I think if you'd ask any of us before the game who we wanted to see as playing as the striker leading the line, everyone would have said, well, our only option is Jansen.
Yeah, we need to hold the ball up.
Yeah, because we need to be able to relieve pressure on our back line. We need to get the ball clear, and we need him to hold the ball up and then play the ball to runners. And I don't think he would have been wrong to think that, but Pochettino is obviously 1,000 times smarter than us amateur tacticians on the internet, and he came up with the actual right plan to beat City.
Look, I won't say I don't know that that wouldn't have worked, because there were a lot of holes between the fullbacks and the center backs. Like, there was room for Lamella and Son to play as those kind of wide inside runners off a pivot forward like Jansen. Like, that could have worked, but the fact is, we didn't play that.
What he did worked extremely well.
Right. So, I mean, I think the big story of this game was our midfield. And I think the obvious person that people have gravitated towards is Wanyama, who I think I have been very down on Wanyama since we signed him.
On his passing ability.
Mostly on his passing ability.
But that was really only a problem in his first game for us. Like, whatever else you want to say about Wanyama, no, he's gotten much better at that before yesterday.
It was a problem for him at Celtic and Southampton. Like, it's always been a problem of Wanyama.
What's happened is they've asked him, like, they're simplifying what they ask him to do in terms of passing. It's like, nope, easy layoffs. Don't make an ambitious pass. You're there to break up play.
We've seen Wanyama struggle with 5-yard passes. Like,
yeah, but
it's not a thing he doesn't do. But the thing that he did so well was he looked like Sandro out there. I mean, he was that mobile, deep-lying pivot defensive midfielder that covered the fullback zones really, really well, which for all Dyer is really, really good. You know, I don't think he ever does that.
I don't think he blows people off he doesn't blow people off the ball like Wanyama was doing either. I mean, making football tackle or like American football tackles.
So Dyer does a lot with positioning and being in the right spot at the right time. And that's why he works so well with Dembele, who is very much all over the place. But Wanyama is just
like Wanyama was a guy
another
who
thing.
The ball would go into like the wide areas, and Wanyama was bulldozing all the way to the wings to take the balls off their wingers and fullbacks, and like leaving Rose and Walker in reserve to clean up after him. You know, he won so many tackles, and the tackles he didn't win, you know, he just disrupted shit enough that our fullbacks were able to take the ball and then turn it straight into an attack because, you know, they're fast and they're good.
Think about the day Raheem Sterling had. He spent all day having like the shittiest little
all day not getting a red card.
No, he spent all day getting his ass kicked by Danny Rose and Victor Wanyama, and they were both just like
Kyle Walker for a little while.
Yeah, you're right. He was just getting. Sterling was doing his own shitty stuff, especially to Rose. But like, and we'll get to Danny Rose in a minute, but.
But that's the
all
thing.
All like, three of those guys were just all over. You're right. But it's like, I think Sterling was the one who was getting the worst of it because he was dealing with Rose for so much of the game.
And you look at Sterling, who you can say has been one of the top 5 players of this season, like in the Premier League.
He's been really good.
Like, he's been phenomenal every game, and he was a complete non-entity. And I think Wanyama is a huge, huge reason for that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just—I didn't mean to interrupt your point, but I was just going to say, to the extent that we got things right, I feel like City and Pep specifically got things very much wrong with their tactics.
Do you think that was because they didn't know what they were going to get out of Spurs, or because they were just nervous because they didn't have De Bruyne?
Well, Well, I think part of it is not having De Bruyne, but I also think that the another part of this is if you're Pep, you have experience with Mauricio Pochettino. There is film on how his teams play your teams. There's tapes on, you know, there's no shortage of scouting on what Pochettino wants to do to teams that want to possess the ball and knock it around. And, you know, you have priors with him. It's really kind of the first big game that City have played in the league. I mean, other than us, they've played the Manchester Derby, and the rest of the teams they've played,
I mean, that's
been
a pretty big
pretty much
game.
Garbage.
I mean, aside no, but, from I mean, the fact that but Mourinho's of, United suck, but, you know.
Right, but in terms of, like, the relative skill levels of the team, they haven't played any really good team yet.
Can we all just take a moment to appreciate how we're talking about Manchester United in the year 2016? That is just...
I mean, we beat Stoke 4-0, Manchester United drew to Stoke.
No. So, Manchester United drew to Stoke in their best game of the season, Ben. Come on.
So he makes these kind of, so you have to wonder, like, what are the changes that he made to counteract what he knows Pochettino does, or were they because De Bruyne and those guys are missing, or was it just because Spurs are good and when teams come to White Hart Lane, they have to play differently and adjust to us for the first time ever, you know? And I think specifically with playing, whichever Fernandinho is bad. I think it's the regular Fernando. It's Fernando regular. Playing him was dumb and was bad and makes, in hindsight, probably in foresight, makes no sense.
Didn't Fernando fuck up against Celtic, too? Like, wasn't he at fault for a lot of the problems
I feel like
in that game?
Fucked up against
Celtic. Yeah, well.
Fernando is generally bad. But one of the things about Man City, so Man City has played this season the same kind of 4-1-4-1 that we rolled out against City. And it's been hugely successful, largely because Fernandinho has been exactly what Wanyama was for us this weekend. He's incredibly mobile. He is involved in attack and defense. He's all over the pitch. He covers wide areas. He's really been really phenomenal. You know, they were without De Bruyne and Nolito, who has also been quietly excellent. And that kind of forced a tactical reshuffle. You know, they brought in Navas, who is, I guess, nominally a kind of like-for-like player. But what it meant they had to do, or what they chose to do, which I think was Pep's big mistake that all of their mistakes flowed from, was he brought in Fernando instead of Gundogan. And instead of just bringing in Fernando, he played Fernando as the single pivot and moved Fernandinho further forward because Fernandinho has some attacking capabilities. But it's obviously not what he's good at. So they ruined the best part of their press, the guy that holds it all together. When, you know, again, we look at how Spurs played this match. When we were pressing and people broke the first line of press, Wanyama was there to close it down and turn those otherwise threatening attacks into nothing. Yep. That's what Fernandinho had been for Man City. Instead, they have Fernando, who was just bad at football. Like, I don't know how to stress that enough. He's just not good.
Not playing Gundogan thing is.
And so
when Gundogan came on, we looked a lot worse. Do you think that's because of the stage of the game or because Gundogan?
Both, because it also, like, again, allowed Fernandinho to drop deeper and, like, help control midfield in a way that they
Didn't
lost.
Really play Gundogan Gundogan or however we're going to pronounce his name. They didn't really play him in midfield.
How they've played him. They've played Gundogan in that band of four behind the striker, which is not like as like the sort of insidey forward like Silva and De Bruyne, which is not where he excels at. But like he can pass the ball well and he's good. But what it did was again it allowed Fernandinho to drop back, and Fernandinho knows how to control the midfield, and Fernando sucks. And so where City would break our first line of press, they would run into a brick wall named Wanyama. When we broke their first line of press, we would run into Fernando, who was, I don't know, playing Pokemon or something in the middle of the pitch. And that was the big mismatch, I think, that let the whole game work. And I'm going to talk about it because I haven't yet. I've restrained myself thus far. But the real MVP of this match was Christian Eriksen. And as good as Wanyama was, Christian Eriksen put on maybe the best central midfield performance I have ever seen out of a footballer. And I
You got to watch Luka Modric for like
I don't think I've seen
Modric play, at least not for Spurs. I don't think I've seen Modric play a game where he looked that good.
The thing about Eriksen is, so Eriksen, defying all lineup conventions that what we thought was going to happen, he ended up playing as the deepest midfielder next to Wanyama. And what Eriksen did was just transcendent. He was both sides of the ball. He had 16 ball recoveries, which is a weird stat. Basically, it means like any tackle, loose ball, ball that pings around, you know, not a direct pass from the other team directly to his foot, or not a direct pass from our team to his foot, but any kind of time the ball is bobbling around in midfield, he recovered it 16 times. Nobody in the Premier League this season has had more than 7. So, you know, these stats are kind of weak and unhelpful in a lot of ways, but what it does show you is that Eriksen was everywhere in midfield, and when the ball was not directly in our attacking mode, he was getting on the ball. On top of that, he also had a tackle and 4 interceptions. So 21 times he turned non-possession into possession.
But this is what Eriksen does. This is what Eriksen does. That's what's made him so good. And what I don't think enough Spurs fans appreciate about Eriksen, and we're going to really learn to appreciate it when he's gone, is he snaps defense into attack. And he gets that ball. He instantly makes a good pass. He also does a lot of work intercepting it. Usually he's doing it higher up the pitch. But in this game, you know, he's breaking up the midfield, which is always useful, but particularly against a team like Pep. And you've got Dele and Son upfield, and I don't think either of them's quite as good as Eriksen is at picking out a pass and all that, but they're both pretty good. And when you put both of them up there together and you have Eriksen doing his thing a little deeper than usual, I think particularly against a team like City, with once you break through that line of theirs, there's not a lot behind it. It was just, you know, it's sort of Eriksen doing what Eriksen, I mean, he might be the best in the world at that. I don't know. Like, he's really good.
The other thing that Ali and Son give you is they are phenomenal direct vertical runners. So every time the ball transitioned from defense to attack, they're off.
And I think they make the players around them better too. Like, because other guys get with the program and start like, oh, okay, I got to start driving forward because
forward, everybody else is in support of that attack.
I don't know if you guys noticed it. Wanyama even got in on the act. He drove forward. He actually had a nice shot on goal. At first, I was kind of furious because I think he missed Sissoko, was wide open on his right. But he only missed the post by, like, you know, that not a whole lot. And
if there's one thing we know Wanyama can do, though, it's take a crack from distance. Like, he's good for one or two of those every year.
Yes, Brian. Thanks. I think the fact that Eriksen had those runners in front of him would normally higher up the pitch, he doesn't necessarily have that vertical space to play the ball into. He was outstanding. You know, it looked like, I hate to compare anybody to Fabregas because gross. The Chelsea title winning year, that was basically what they function on was.
Yeah, but he was Modric winning the ball, team.
Fabregas dumping it into the channels for Hazard, Costa, William to run onto. Eriksen was basically doing that role where he was taking the ball and picks his head up immediately and finds that attacking outlet. Sissoko, I think, did a phenomenal job posting up wide on the right to just be a body to get the ball and like be that outlet for attack, relieve pressure, and then make a defensive action turn into an attacking action.
All right, so this lineup that we saw, this especially, I want to focus on Eriksen for a minute. This lineup that we saw, this performance from Eriksen, I think we can all agree that it was in large part driven by the injuries the team has, and I think we are particularly set up to play City. I think this was a specialty lineup for one reason or another. When this team comes back from the international break, when theoretically Moussa Dembele is healthy, Ben, I'll start with you, but Brian, I do want to hear what you think about this, but since it's Ben's hobby horse, I want to hear him first. Do you keep Eriksen as a deep-lying midfield, or is that something you keep in your bag of tricks for specific teams? Or do you have Dembele back there alongside someone like, you know, Wanyama or Dier? Or Harry Winks, I suppose, could also be in that defensive role.
So for me, the change is Dembele in for Sissoko.
So you put Dembele out on the right then, just to be clear.
Not necessarily, but I think that is an option. And it's interesting because the first time that Pochettino seemed to appreciate Dembele last season before he made him the midfield mainstay. Last season,
Dembele started... He was using Dembele for that stretch in his first year here.
At the end of that first season, 2 years ago.
No, so Dembele was playing as like a destroying number 10, like Oscar does for Chelsea. I don't know why I keep comparing things to Chelsea. I'm sorry. But the beginning of last season, he was playing Dembele instead of Lamella on the right wing.
When Lamella was exiled. That's right. I forgot about that.
And that was the first thought process of how do I use Dembele and make his skill set work. And that's basically what we got from Sissoko this game was he's an outlet ball. He holds the ball under pressure. He can dribble dudes. He's quick, whatever. And I think there's definitely room for that lineup to happen. Exactly what we played against Man City, but with Dembele in for Sissoko, and I think he's better at it. But the other aspect of this sort of 4-1-4-1, and especially if you look at the way City rolls it out when they have a fit De Bruyne, is they have Silva and De Bruyne as the inside attacking midfielders, and they take it in turns to be deep and be close to Fernandinho and to transition the ball and attack. And they're both very similar players in the way that they want to progress the ball. And obviously Dembele and Eriksen are not similar at all. But I think there's room to get Dembele and Eriksen in that 4-1-4-1 where they both play closer to the midfield than they do to the striker. And they let Son and Lamella come inside and make those runs again, like Nolito and Sterling have done all season for Man City. I think Pochettino definitely imprinted on what City was doing well and said, we're going to beat them at that game. And we did. And the fact that it worked so well seems to suggest to me, at least, that there's room to implement that same style with our personnel. And I think Dembele and Eriksen as the kind of close to the midfield players allows you to play that same kind of game. And that is where I would like to see Dembele come into if Harry Kane isn't fit, that's the system I want to see. Now, when Kane is back, I don't see how you leave him out of the lineup. And I think that requires another tactical reshuffle. But in the short term, I think that's how you get the best out of Dembele and Eriksen in this newfound Eriksen role.
Brian, do you agree with that, or would you use Eriksen differently?
I mean, it's hard for me to say, let's just not roll with the lineup that took us to third in the Premier League last year and made us look like the best team in England for large stretches of the season. I mean, Eriksen as a deep-lying midfielder is certainly something that's intriguing. I think it's certainly something that you can get away with against when you have a specific tactical game plan or when you have teams that are less stout in midfield. But I still feel like I would much prefer to roll with defensive midfielder Dembele in the pivot and then Christian Eriksen playing, wide left or behind the striker. I think that's our best lineup. I think that's the best utilization of our personnel. I think Dembele is kind of marginalized by placing him out on the wing. I think if he's maybe as the destroying number 10, then I like that option a little better. But I think he's just so influential and good at controlling games and, controlling our own pace and tempo that you just can't leave him out of the center of the park. And I don't want to really mess with success.
So I want to talk about another player in this game. This was, I feel like, a game of large Spurs players who wanted to prove Ben wrong, because I thought Sissoko was really impressive. Now, I want to stay up front. We are grading Sissoko on a curve after an inflated transfer fee. His rep isn't as big as some of the other players we've signed. I'm not sure how much we were all expecting for him, but this was, like, if this is the kind of performance we can get out of Sissoko on the regular, with just muscling teams off, doing good defensive work, I thought it was really good. But, Ben, you have expressed a lot of skepticism about Sissoko so far this year. Michael's expressed the most, but he's not here right now, so it's landing on you. What did you think of Sissoko in this game? Does it make you feel better about our purchase of him?
So, I feel like I've been more positive about Sissoko than most people.
Well, positive for you, maybe.
But I feel like I was also less positive about Sissoko this game than everybody else. So I think Sissoko did a lot of things really well. He was a great outlet. He was great at holding the ball. He was great in the press. He was a phenomenal defender. He did all of that really well. But I think it was pretty clear also that technically he is deficient compared to everybody else in our attack.
That's not necessarily a merit for him. Yeah, that might just be...
It is.
Well...
It is. I mean, it's also a testament to how good everybody else
is. That's what I mean, yeah.
So, if you look at, like... I can't remember the Twitter feed that does this, but they do this passing map thing.
Oh, that this thing never make any sense to me.
They never do. It shows all the links between the players and, like, the most common passing and, like, the most common...
I mean, I understand the concept of it, Ben. I just don't think it's very clear.
Well, this is for the audience, not for you. So these passing maps try to show a picture of, like, how the ball moved during the game. I think it's very imperfect and very ineffective at what it does. But one of the things I noticed that confirmed what I saw during the game when I looked at this map...
It's like that self-justification. Sissoko,
the map shows every pass, every connection with more than three passes to their name. So, you know, Eriksen to Son, that was 12 passes. Walker to Sissoko was our most common pass of the game. That was like 18 passes. But there was nobody Sissoko had more than three passes to besides Kyle Walker. And that's a problem. You know, you can't have a guy who should be occupying such a prominent role on the right side of our attack who's not connecting with anybody else in the attack. And that, I think, is where Sissoko fell short for me, is that he just could not find anybody else once he was down there with the ball. And
but I don't think it was...
Against a team not as good as City, like... He'll probably do better at that, obviously. I mean, it's inevitable, but it is telling that everybody else didn't have that problem. And so I think there's still work to do with what Sissoko does. Once he does all of the great things he does in the buildup, he's still lacking that final connection and that integration with the attack. Like, none of our good moves, none of the chances that you think back and remember came off of a Sissoko ball or a Sissoko run.
He did poke a ball past, I think, the right back. I can't remember. And then run around. I was impressed by that, but you're right. That was all on
his
own.
He was great running on the ball. He was great on the ball, but he wasn't great with the ball. And that is, I think, the level that he needs to jump to before we're talking about Sissoko being a real contributor to this team. But I think there's definitely a role for him.
Exactly. If there's any lesson I think Spurs fans should take away from this game or thing they should take away from this game, it's Jesus Christ, we have some depth right now. Can you imagine if Dyer, Dembele, and Kane were out last year playing this City team? Like, if we had what we had last year, if we were trotting like Chadley and Mason and all these other guys out there, I think it just would have been disaster, I think. And instead, this year, we're able to put guys like Sissoko in who can run at dudes. You know, we're able to put Wanyama in, who totally just owned that midfield. And, you know, and it's just, it's Son just like filling in for Kane. And I'm not sure you can do that every week, but certainly in this game, it was excellent. It's just, we actually have sort of a backup group of players who can make a real contribution to this team. And it's really nice to watch compared to what we've had in the past.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, like, this summer, I think a lot of people were disappointed with our window because we didn't buy, like, the star guy who was going to take a starting 11 place, no question about it. But I think it was very deliberate what we did this summer, and that was to make sure that if we lose a player, anybody we sub in, our team is still really good. And I think this game was, like, a testament to that, of we have the ability to roll 15, 16 guys deep and rotate around, and we got through a Champions League match the week before, and a Premier League game the week before that, and a Cup game the midweek before that. Like, you know, we've played like six games in the past 2 or 3 weeks, and we haven't looked, you know, out of place at any moment during that period. And that is a testament to how smart our summer was, because we bought the guys that make sure that we don't suffer a huge drop off when key guys are gone. And that was a huge problem last year. You know, when Dembele and Ali were suspended down the stretch, our team fell apart completely. And we've seen against the best team in the league, one of the best teams in the world, that we can hold our own, and not just hold our own, but we can fucking whip ass.
Brian, are Spurs a title challenger right now? And are you emotionally prepared for that?
I mean, I had all last year to prepare for that. So, I mean, yeah.
You never once accepted last year that we were a title challenger.
Leicester won a title this year, last year, and they're not getting close to one this year. So, you know, it's not... I'm not sure I expected us to be challenging for a title this year, but here we are.
What was the question again? We're challenging for the title. I mean, yes,
are we challenging for the title? Are Spurs a title contender?
I mean, yes, we're in second place. We are definitely.
Yeah, but it's October. It's early October. Like, is this?
I mean, I think if you look at what has transpired in the league so far, I think the three best teams are Spurs, Liverpool, and City. And I don't think it's particularly close with any of the rest of the big clubs.
You don't think Arsenal could sneak in there?
I think they will because they are Arsenal. Like, that's just, I mean, that seems to be what they do. But, I mean, I think, you know, if you'd have asked me before this week, Manchester City were going to walk the league, and there was nobody in the Premier League that was even going to challenge them, and I would have said that they'll win the league by 15 or 20 points. And now maybe not. I don't know. I mean, you know, Liverpool has looked really good. They have really suspect defense.
Yeah, I feel like Liverpool's been super fortunate lately, but I'm sure people would say that about us too.
But I mean, their press looks, you know, it's, you know, the second season under Klopp, and they look a lot more competent in their system. And, you know, this is our third season under Pochettino, and we look like we have honed what we do to a, you know, razor sharp edge. And I don't think there's any way for us to not be in the title conversation. I don't know if I'm ready to commit to, like, we're going to win the league, but there's no reason why we shouldn't be in the conversation. I said at the beginning of the year, I thought we'd finish second or third. So there's no reason why that still shouldn't be the goal.
Ben, is this a strange sensation? I mean, as a Spurs fan, not to be too critical of our fandom, but this is still weird, right? Like, 'cause it's definitely weird for me.
It is weird. I'm going to take it to the Twitter machine. Today on Twitter, a thing went around that was basically like, who are the three signings that you were most hyped for in your time as a fan? And thinking about it, for me, Raphael van der Vaart, I think, is the most excited I've ever been for a signing, regardless of how he played as a player. He was great. But the idea that we Spurs could get a guy who almost played real minutes for Real Madrid felt like the most insane, unattainable thing in the world. It was like such a huge coup, the idea that like this guy would come to a team like us.
Especially and, if he came out of nowhere, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the circumstances, it was deadline day, midnight, out of nowhere. It was all very exciting. But like, just the simple fact that like this guy chose Spurs and like we got a guy of that caliber was like unreal to me. And I think to a lot of people. Everybody, probably. And now fast forward 5 years, and I look at this team, and like, there's very few people in world football that we could have signed, and I would have been like, holy shit, this is a game changer. Like, I look at this team, and we're fucking good. And I don't know when I got used to it, but like, it has gradually happened over the past season or so that I am suddenly comfortable with the idea that, like, everybody on this team is fantastic.
But there's something special about watching Tottenham Hotspur go out and just wax a Pep Guardiola team. I mean, I know it's early days. One of their key players just got injured, but like it feels strange. It feels strange to me. Like, we didn't nick a win. It was a crazy end-to-end match. I mean, we went out there and beat the shit out of a Pep Guardiola team.
And please let me reiterate, like, yes, they lost Kevin De Bruyne, who may be the best player in the Premier League. But we were without three players
who were
irreplaceable last season. And Dembele and Kane seemed irreplaceable as of a week ago.
And we just worked them. And it's like, you know, even last year, as good as we were last year, and I understand there's mitigating circumstances, but you look at, like, Dortmund game, and, like, there's, just, like, that creeping doubt in the back of your head where it's like, maybe we're not as good as I think we are. But then you see a game like Sunday, and you're like, well, maybe we are as good. Maybe we're better than I think we are. I mean, it's still a strange experience. Like,
yeah, I did not bet on Spurs as a title contender going into the season. I thought it was possible, but, like, Mourinho United, Conte Chelsea, Pep City, like, Arsenal being Arsenal, another year of Klopp, like, you know, it seemed like it was going to be very hard and all of these teams are going to be very good. And we have walked into this season and said, nah, like, we got this. And
no, I don't think any of those teams have had a performance as impressive as what we did on Sunday. Like, not even Liverpool's Chelsea performance, which honestly I think was predicated on a lot of luck. But, I mean, we looked so good and I am just not mentally equipped for it. It's strange. It's like, I thought, oh, Pep Guardiola's team, we're missing all these key players, we're just going to get, they're going to kill us. And, you know, maybe that's a bad mentality on my part as a fan, but Jesus Christ, like, it's nuts. I don't know. Like, I know you shouldn't get carried away because every team will have a good game, but.
I mean, look, if this game had ended like one of the City AVB games in his last season where we just got obliterated, I would have been surprised, but I would have also been like, well, we did just lose 5-1 to Newcastle like 6 months ago, you know, like,
well, and we're missing three of our best players.
It would have been like, well, that sucks, but hey, you know what? We can bounce back from this. We can fight it out. We can get in the top four. We can qualify to the Champions League again. You know, that wasn't an impossible thought going into this weekend, but I think as Spurs fans, we're conditioned not to believe because we have seen it go wrong a lot of times. Like, well, even last year, when it went like, as right as possible, like, it still went wrong down the end. You know, like, it just feels like a thing that just happens. Like, we're just not equipped to handling the fact that we're actually phenomenal.
Well, Spurs haven't been a legitimate title contender. Yeah, we haven't been a legitimate title contender since, like, what, I don't know, the 80s? Like, I mean, it's nuts. It's great. It's great. And I don't know how I'm going to handle it the rest of the year. We're going to get some viewer or reader or listener. Yeah, there we go. I got there eventually. Some listener questions in a moment. There's two things I don't want to let this game pass without some commentary. First, let's talk with the one that I think won't take as much time, is Vincent Janssen. Brian, did this? I don't know. I don't want to say, are you worried? Because clearly, I think this was a bit of a tactical decision by Pochettino. But I mean, he seemed like he was trying to kill people when he got on the pitch at the end of the game. I mean, I'm a little worried. This is all getting into his head. I know Michael is constantly preaching patience at us, and he's going to be fine, and all his underlying numbers look good, and he's doing good things. But I still see a guy who is trying a little too hard. Are you concerned at all?
I'm pretty sure I answered this question last week. And
yeah,
I'm
going to get dropped for a match against City without Harry Kane.
My answer of no, I'm not concerned. He's still getting into positions and doing the things that he needs to do. I'm not worried by how he looked in a 8-minute cameo against City.
He didn't miss that one chance.
That's where I'm getting Soldado flashbacks.
I mean,
it's unfair. It's totally unfair.
You know, like, I mean, I'm not concerned. I think he's going to be fine. I think, you know, he does enough good things. Like Michael says, he gets into enough good positions. He's shooting from the right spots. Like, I'm not at all concerned.
All right. Next up, important that I really don't want to let this game pass without commentary. how fucking good is Danny Rose? Like, just that performance was – it's another thing. You look back a few years and, like, I wish I could get in the time machine and be like, you know, 2011 Skipjack and be like, hey, Greg, guess what? Danny Rose is going to be the best left back in the Premier League in about 5 years. And, you know, just to see the expression on my face. It's incredible how good this guy's gotten. And I love that he might be, like, the low-key, like, biggest dirtbag on our team. I mean, he was really pissing Sterling off all game with dirty little tackles and, like, just hilariously faked dives. I mean, it's just – I love Danny Rose. He's so much fun to watch out there. I mean, Ben, do you have anything to add about Danny?
No, Danny was great. And I think this game, having both of our starting fullbacks back was essential. Yep. And that I think is the big vulnerability in this team is when we have to play Davis and Trippier, you know, it's not the same team.
It's not even that they're bad, although we're not going to get into the Trippier argument again. It's just that they can't run up and down the pitch.
Right.
They just can't run like those other guys can. And there's other problems with them, but.
Right. But that's the big one. It's like the ability to play offense and defense without missing a beat between the two roles is, I mean, there's just not a lot of fullbacks in the world who do that as consistently and as well. And, you know, you're talking about Danny Rose, who had a great game, was very good, but I think you're missing Kyle Walker, who I think is maybe the best right back in the world right now. The form that this guy is in this season is out of control. His work leading up to the penalty that Eric Lamela missed, we won't talk about. but I mean, the way he fought for that ball from his right back position all the way across midfield and then drove towards the box to set up the Dele Alli penalty was unbelievable. And I think Kyle Walker right now is a guy that, you know, he's been at Spurs for a really long time and we kind of take for granted what he does, but he's amazing.
I
think he needs a shout out because I don't think he ever gets it. Danny Rose, I feel like, gets talked about because people are still surprised that Danny Rose is
both
good
of them
because
he was
so recently bad.
But I think both of them are the same. Not too long ago, they were both athletes more than real players. And yeah, they kind of got by on their speed. I mean, but I think him and Walker are both, they've progressed in that same way where they've become these really sort of cultured, very talented players, and they're just not getting by off their physical gifts anymore. I mean, I think Walker is actually going to have a pretty good decline because I think he's going to be smart enough to live without his speed.
Yeah, I just like for Walker, I think it wasn't that long ago that he was the young player of the year in the Premier League. Like, we've always expected good things from Walker, and I think we kind of undersell the good things he actually does because of that. Whereas Danny Rose, we expected nothing, and it's a very pleasant surprise every time.
I don't know. I mean, it was what, 2012, where Spurs fans abused Walker so much after that Chelsea game that he deleted his Twitter account. I mean,
that did happen.
I mean, I think Spurs fans thought Walker was was more of a sprinter than a footballer for a while until, I mean, shit, it might be until Pochettino got here, honestly. Like, I mean, the work he's done with, that's probably unfair to Walker. I think he was getting better before that, but they're both so good. I think you're right. I
feel comfortable saying that Kyle Walker is the best right back in the world right now.
They're certainly the best. I think they're the best fullbacks in the league. I think Spurs are the best back line in the league. I don't think it's even close. And it's really great, and I love it. All right. I think it's time we get to some questions from our listeners. Brian, do you have a first choice DM between Wanyama or Dyer, or do you not think it matters that much because of how many games we're going to have to play?
I still think it's Derek Dyer. I'm firmly of the belief that you shouldn't lose your job through injury. And as good as Wanyama was against City, he still has enough question marks, like his ability to pass and, you know, consistently being in the right position, that I still have questions about him. And so I'd say Eric Dyer still.
So I'm not sure. I'm going to say it depends on how we roll out the rest of our team. Like, I think if Dembele's back and we're playing a 4-2-3-1, you know, that Dyer Dembele midfield is as solid can be, and they cover for each other well. you know, that relationship is sound. But I don't think Dyer has the mobility to do what Wanyama did in this game. And so if we're going to play like a single pivot, I think Wanyama is the guy for those situations. So I think they both have a role and will both get a lot of minutes because they play the same position, but they do that role so differently that I think they're just both great that they give us different options.
That question was from at THFC Rye on Twitter, by the way. Sorry about that, Mr. Rye. Our next question, Ben, I want to hear this from you. This is from Trayton Miller on the Twitter machine, at Trayton Miller. He wants to know, in honor of the glorious Kolarov own goal, what is your favorite own goal of all time? Mine is Aaron Lennon kicking the ball directly into Gareth Bale's face. And the ball going
answer.
Directly into the goal against, I think that was Liverpool. That's still my favorite own goal of all time. Do you need a second to think of it? I can go to Brian.
Yeah, of our own goals, that was like
that is
easy my first choice. Of all own goals, I don't know. A few years ago, Company had a really bad one. There was one on Sunderland. I think it was Virginie who like scored it like a fucking striker from way out. That was pretty impressive. I also remember one where Rio Ferdinand did a no look back pass to Van der Sar, and Van der Sar was on the other side of the goal, and Man United looked just stupid as fuck when Rio no look scored on their own team. But yeah, that led into Bale's face was special.
It was just, it's better because we didn't lose that game, but it was still one of those, like, what the fuck did I just watch happen? Maybe that's how Bale got the follicles knocked out of the back of his head. Brian, what's your favorite own goal of all time?
Does the Nani goal against Aurelio Gomez count as an own goal? I feel like it should.
Aurelio Gomez is involved. It probably counts as an own goal.
It should. But I was like the ones where defenders try to head the ball back to their goalkeeper so that they can use their hands, but they end up like somehow lobbing their own goalkeeper. I can't think of a specific one that's happened in the Premier League recently, but there's always gifs going around on the internet of those. Yeah, the Bale Lennon one is definitely the best Spurs one that I can remember. I feel like Woodgate scored a really ugly, like, headed own goal one time, but I don't recall the circumstances.
Oh, Woodgate. Love that guy.
I just want to bring this up because Ben told me what it was before before the podcast. But Haley Bachrock just wants to talk about how great the Guapo Derby name is. And I did not know about this. Ben, can you share this with our listeners who might not have heard of the Guapo Derby?
Yes. So when Pochettino and Pep Guardiola first faced off Espanyol versus Barcelona in a Barcelona derby, they called it the Guapo Derby because, A, they're both very handsome. And for those of you who don't speak Spanish, guapo means handsome in Spanish. But also, Guardiola, and Pochettino makes Guapo, and that's phenomenal.
It is disgusting that this wasn't like just latched on by the English press, because that is incredible, and I love it.
So we are the most Guapo team in the Premier League. I think that's what that proves.
We are definitely the most Guapo team in the Premier League. I have a question for you guys. Brian, I'll start with you. We had a little bit of an argument between Son and Lamella over who should take penalty kicks. I don't think Harry Kane's all that good at penalty kicks, but he gets to take them because he's our striker. When Harry Kane's out, who do you want to take penalty kicks?
Probably either Son or Eriksen. I think they both have penalty duty for their respective national teams. I feel like every time South Korea plays a match, Heung-min Son scores like 3 penalties. So that'd be my preference. Lamella would not have probably been in my top 3, I don't think, on the field at the time.
Lamella wants it too bad. That's why I don't like Lamella doing it. I think he wants to score too badly.
I don't know. I don't think that's it. I just don't think that I've ever seen – I can't recall him scoring any penalties ever.
I'm sure he did at Roma. He didn't score 15 goals.
I mean, not for Spurs anyway.
Yeah.
So,
I know they didn't let him take a penalty in the whatever final this summer when Claudio Bravo shut out Argentina.
Yeah, so I mean, well, like, of the guys that were on the field, that I would have, it would have been like Son, Eriksen, Ali would have been my choices to take penalties before.
Ali would have been my absolute first choice.
Ali would have just flipped the ball up and like tried to head it in or something, which could have been great.
Can you bat flip a penalty? I mean, penalties are all about mind games, and there's nobody I would trust in a battle of fucking cheeky mind bullshit over Dele Alli.
Yeah, if there's anyone who could figure out like some new way to humiliate a goalkeeper, or at least try to, I think it's Dele Alli.
I bet Danny Rose also takes a really good penalty.
You know who I would have picked if I was going a little bit? I think Eriksen's probably who I would pick, but if I'm not going to pick Eriksen, I'm going to be a little less obvious. I'll bet Kyle Walker takes a good penalty. That guy can hit the fuck out of a football. Like, I mean, he hits, like, he's taken some really good free kicks over the years. He doesn't do it all the time. But he wallops the ball.
I don't know. Like, he, like, leathers the ball. Like, I want somebody a little more nuanced for the penalty. I bet Toby takes a good penalty.
Well, that's, you know, just because Toby just, like, does everything well.
Steady Eddie, like, no problem.
No, I don't know. I think Walker – I don't have a problem. If he can place it, like, which I think Walker could, you know, like, just leather it and, like, you know, good luck trying to stop this. Like, you know, as long as it doesn't hit him in the dead center. I don't know. Walker's my offbeat answer. And our final question comes from, I think this is a good one, this comes from Wes Vinson. Brian, I'll start with you. Since Son is on fire, which two players on Spurs make the best NBA Jam team?
Okay. All right. I will say, man, I think Jan and Toby have really good chemistry, but I don't know how good they'd be at NBA Jam because neither of them can really, like, they're both big guys, so I don't know if any of them will be able to shoot the three, which is hugely important in NBA Jam. I think I would go with Ali and Dyer. They're both bigger dudes, but
NBA Jam a dating sim? And, like, I'm getting,
yeah, it is. It really is.
All right. Just so we're clear.
It's what jam means, Greg.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But yeah, because Ali's the more technically proficient one. He can shoot from distance. And Eric Dyer's just big and, like, you know, blocks people and hits them in the face and that sort of stuff. Yeah. I think that's.
So, I mean, I think you have to look at, like, who was actually, like, who was good in actual NBA Jam? And I think the obvious dominant team was Utah with Stockton and Malone. You have Stockton running the ball, dropping threes, and Malone posting up. So I think the obvious answer here is Christian Eriksen as our John Stockton and Harry Kane as our Karl Malone. Easy.
Not a surprisingly not racist answer from the Wheeler Dealer Radio panel. I'm very pleased. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything to add to this, although I think maybe it would be Moussa Dembele and Eric Dyer, because I think of everyone on Spurs, they would deal the best with being actually on fire. So, yeah. How about those two?
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to get one of those bits in there.
Yeah. Eric Dyer would overcome his fear once he sees that it's actually not so bad. Or maybe that it is bad and he's lived through it. I don't know. Yeah, that's the ticket. And on that note, we're going to wrap it up for the night. That is a fucking great way to go into an international break, even if having to go into an international break now kind of sucks. But yeah, Ben Daniels, where can people find you online? I assume on some sort of Sidekicks message board.
Yes. That Chuck Norris movie with Jonathan Brandis, that's all about me.
Is that what it's about?
Find that on Netflix and you will get in touch with me.
Just debating the rankings of all the Robins for some reason, right?
You can find me on Twitter at Gary Rootbeer.
Oh, okay. So we're doing it this week.
Oh, we're not doing any bits. Wow.
Actual answer of, like, that's my actual Twitter handle. Like, you should follow me. I say really, really good things all the time.
And you can find a lot of sex bots by looking at his followers. I would highly recommend it.
I have 1,000 Twitter followers.
Oh, God.
995 of them are sex bots.
You're like
100%.
Oh, my God. Okay. Brian, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian with a Y, THFC.
Cool. Anywhere else?
Nope, that's pretty much it.
You on Tinder?
What's your LinkedIn?
Yeah. Are you on Grindr?
My LinkedIn is Willie McQuaid. You can find me for all your Canadian travel needs.
Yeah, if you need someone to carve blubber off a seal, he's your man.
Please endorse me for my skills in igloo building and apologizing.
Maple syrup creation. Okay. And finally, I'm Skipjack. You can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. But you can always contact me about wrestling on my alt account at Gary Rootbeer. And on that note, Whisper second in the table by 1 point, looking to mount a title challenge. I am Skipjack for Brian, for Ben. Come on.